All right, good afternoon, everyone. I am going to call this meeting to order. This is the April 15, 2026 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kottkamp, and I've been appointed by Chelan County to serve as a land use hearing examiner. My job is to render decisions on various matters that are authorized to come before me, which include the two matters that are on today's agenda. I will consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decisions. The hearing process has certain rules. I'll try to be relaxed and informal, but we still have a procedure we're going to use. For each item that we take separately, first of all, staff will present their report and make whatever recommendations that they wish to make. Next, the applicant or the applicant's representative is given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. It is the applicant that has the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable rules and regulations. Next, if somebody from the public came to testify on either matter, you'll be given that chance to do so. And if there is any testimony in opposition to a project, I will give the applicant an opportunity to submit whatever rebuttal testimony they wish to make. Because the applicant has the burden of proof, the applicant gets the last opportunity to present testimony and evidence. If you are going to testify, I'll have you, I think at this point, come up to the center, or do you want them over here to the side? Does it?
Are we going McKenna first? Or
yeah.
Okay. He's online, so.
Well, I'm just wanting to let the public know where to testify. So you'll come up to this center table. I'll have you state your name and address. If you're going to give evidence, I will swear you in as a witness. I'd ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the application that we're talking about and other issues, and not other issues beyond the scope of the proposal. I'd remind everyone that this is not a time for questions and answers. So nobody will be allowed to ask questions of staff or the hearing examiner or the applicant. The only exception is that there will be cross-examination allowed against any expert witness that is called, and that cross-examination will come from either the attorney for the applicant or the attorney for the Malaga Water District. So that's the first thing to understand, is that there's no questions and answers. The second thing is that for members of the public, I will give you 3 minutes to testify. We have a lot of time that's going to be going into that second item on the agenda. So I have found that 3 minutes is more than enough time for somebody to state what their position is as to how the project does or does not comply with the applicable rules and regulations. We have a sign-in roster here. Please be sure you've signed in. If you haven't done so yet, you can do so on your way out by coming and testifying at today's hearing. You may obtain important legal rights, so it's important that we're able to document your presence here today. If you do have any cell phones, please check them right now. Make sure that they are either in silent mode or turned off so that your phone does not disrupt the proceedings. Now, except as provided by the Chelan County Code regarding requests to reopen hearings and requests for reconsideration, my decision on both of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. Appeals are by means of what's called a land use petition action. Those have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of the decision. Those have to be filed with Chelan County Superior Court. And if your appeal is not timely filed, your appeal would be barred. I've reviewed both items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in either of the properties or the proposals to be heard today. I will be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. And outside of receiving and reviewing for each item, the staff report, all of the materials that have been submitted by the applicants, all the exhibits that are referenced in the staff report, I'll go through the matters on the second item that I'm going to admit into the record. But other than receiving and reviewing the items that were submitted to me, I've not had any communication regarding either of the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if there is anybody here today who objects to my participation as a hearing examiner, you need to come forward and state so at this time. Hearing none, we'll turn to the first item on today's agenda. This is the conditional use permit amendment application, given application number CUPA 25-038. This is an application that has been submitted to remove a condition of approval from the hearing examiner's decision dated December 12, 2025. For the record, I'm going to admit into the record get down here just a second. The staff report, Exhibits A and B that are referenced in the staff report. I'll admit all the application materials and the comments that have come through. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I'll admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference and turn this matter over to staff for their presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. Susan Dretke with Community Development. As you may remember, this originally went to hearing in December of last year, December 3rd to be exact, 2025. And due to a series of events, I won't go into at this time, neither a representative for the Department of Public Works nor the applicant attended that hearing. Thus, your decision rendered on December 12th included the condition that the two driveways proposed to serve the use had to be separated by 70 feet per an earlier Department of Public Works memo, which was the memo on record for that decision. The Department of Public Works did prepare and submit an updated memo indicating that that 70-foot separation would not be required. However, that did not make it to the file until December 4th, which was the day after the hearing was closed and therefore couldn't be entered as an exhibit. And so the applicant was informed that in order to officially and formally change or remove that condition from the conditional use permit, that they needed to go through and apply for a conditional use permit amendment to eliminate the 70 foot of separation between the two driveways. That action is what is here before you today. And that is all I have. I notice that Mr. McKenna, the applicant, is online and is available to speak.
All right, thank you very much. I do not have any questions of staff. Mr. McKenna, are you prepared to proceed?
I am prepared.
Can you state your name and an address for the record, please?
Sean McKenna, and the address is 4550 Mission Creek Road, Cashmere, Washington, 98815.
All right, Mr. McKenna, I'll have you raise your right hand for me, please. Sir, do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony that you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. And you are once again the applicant and property owner for this matter. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Have you had a chance to review the staff report?
I have.
Do you have any disagreement with any of the representations within the staff report?
I don't.
All right. There are conditions of approval that are the same as the former recommended conditions of approval. Have you reviewed those and do you have any objection with those?
I don't.
But you did review them?
I did. I reviewed. It's the same application and the same comments other than the public works 70 foot. I don't know if you call it a variance or removing that from the original.
All right. Yeah, the request is to remove one of the conditions of approval that I set. So what else would you like to tell me about this application?
I mean, we are requesting to host a few events per year on our property. The request was to remove the 70 feet per my communication with Public Works that started months prior to the approval. And it was my understanding when I working with Public Works that they got everything submitted into your guys' online portal. And I assumed that was taken care of. And the gentleman that I was working with at Public Works acknowledged that he missed that deadline. And that's where I'm at today is coming back asking for the things that were said are actually in the application.
All right, thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you though.
All right, thank you very much. Did any member of the public that's here in person come to testify on this matter? Seeing none, is there anybody that's online that came to testify on this matter? Indicating nobody online. Is there anything further from staff?
No, sir.
All right, then, Mr. McKenna, what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the public record portion of this hearing. I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Looking at the rest of the agenda, I would note just for the record that application P24-444 has been formally withdrawn. by the applicant. That leaves us with P24-473. This is a request for preliminary plat approval to construct 11 residential lots on approximately 4 acres on property located within Chelan County, that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in all the application materials. For the record, I'm going to admit into the record at this time by this reference these exhibits. I'd ask that the parties pay attention. If I've missed something, you need to let me know. First of all, exhibits A through D will be those exhibits referenced in the staff report. Exhibit E will be the staff report. Exhibit F will be agency and public comments from the comment file. Exhibit G will be noticing documents from the noticing file. Exhibit H will be the application materials from the application file. Exhibit I will be the applicant's brief dated April 8, 2026. J is the applicant's witness list, April 8, 2026. K is the applicant's exhibit index. L is the applicant brief, exhibits 1 through 21. Along with exhibits 1 through 21. Exhibit M is the Malaga Water District brief dated April 8, 2026. Exhibit N is the Malaga Water District proposed findings and conclusions. Exhibit O, Malaga Water District witness list dated April 8, 2026. Exhibit P is the declaration of David Krause dated April 6, 2026. Q is the declaration of Jeff Wilson, dated April 8, 2026. R, declaration of Matthew Crane, dated April 8, 2026. S, declaration of Ryan Peterson, dated April 8, 2026. T is this thing, the applicant's binder containing exhibits 1 through 99. There are duplicates from others in there, but I just want to make sure that I include everything. And Q is a public comment that you received today. Who is that from again?
That one, there is no name and date on this one.
That's you, right, Mr.
Nancy? Q-R-S-T-U. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
It will be from Bill Roberts, which was received today. And we also have two others that were submitted on the 14th and the 13th. These two I sent up, but I didn't get a receive, so I'd like to make sure those make it into the record as well.
All right. Do you want to hand them up, and then I'll just make a note of them. So exhibit V will be the first one I have here. There's the comment from Helen Horn. W is the comment from Bruce Spencer. And then we have the Mr. Roberts. Okay. So exhibits A through W are admitted into the record at this time by this reference. Kind of going off a little bit here, but from the applicant, is there anything that I missed that, that you can identify at this time?
No, Your Honor, but after seeing Mr. Hotchkiss's excellent work on the fact and conclusions of law, I have something similar that if it's helpful, please.
It's too late. I was very, very clear. Okay. Mr. Hotchkiss, anything that I missed on going through things? He's indicating no. So those exhibits are admitted into the record, and we'll turn this matter over to staff for their presentation.
Tori Kennison, planner for Chelan County Community Development. An application for a major subdivision has been submitted to the county to develop an approximately 4-acre parcel into 11 residential lots, ranging in size from 12,553 square feet to 17,058 square feet. The subject property is located within the Rural Village Zoning District of Chelan County, which requires lot sizes to comply with the Chelan-Douglas Health District standards for public or community water and sewage disposal per Chelan County Code. Proposed access to the lots would be provided from West Malaga Road via an internal roadway. Domestic water services is proposed through the Malaga Water District, and sanitation is proposed via individual on-site septic systems. Since the application materials were submitted, the water availability letter from Malaga Water District has expired. In addition, comments received from the Chelan Douglas Health District indicate that the existing conditions may not support the proposed level of development relying on individual septic systems, as the subject property is located within the Malaga Water District's wellhead protection area. After reviewing the application materials and agency comments, staff finds the proposal is not consistent with the revised code of Washington or the Chelan County Code. Specifically, the application fails to demonstrate adequate and legally available water supply for the proposed subdivision. We have asked both Chelan Douglas Health District and the Malaga Water District to be present for this hearing and to be available to address concerns or questions from the hearing examiner regarding the underlying water and septic issues.
All right, anything from staff?
Nothing further.
All right, thank you very much. Turn the matter over to the applicant now. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Accept as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor. Given us 30 minutes and we plan on reserving.
I have actually given you an hour. So how much did you want to take right now?
About 30 minutes and then reserve the rest for our expert witness and then any rebuttal.
Okay, let me reset my timer then. I'll let you know when 30 minutes are up, and if you go longer, I'll just take that off of the back end. Yeah.
Okay. Are we going, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your name and address, please.
My name is Ronnie Sampson, Overcast Law, address 23 South Wenatchee Avenue.
Do you intend to present any evidence yourself, any testimony? You want to be sworn in as a witness?
Do not want to be sworn in.
All right. All right. So what would you like to tell me?
Thank you. I'd like to tell you that I represent the applicant. I'd like to tell you that John Port is here. He will be a fact witness. And Bill Sullivan is here, and he will be an expert witness. He's the one who did the CARA critical air aquifer recharge report that we rely on so heavily. And so I'll start by talking about our legal standards, why we think this ought to be approved. But first of all, we all know we live in a beautiful place. I'm speechifying, I'm sorry, but we live in a beautiful place, and it has the best water I have ever tasted.
I'm going to say this of everybody. You got to address to me. I don't want to seem like you're...
We've never had an audience, so okay.
Yeah, well, pretend you don't.
Yeah. Good. Anyhow, so I was planning on saying that, but that's one of the reasons why we're growing, is it's beautiful. The other reason why we're growing is just natural organic growth. And because of that, there's a housing shortage. It's well known in public planning documents. And counties are updating their comprehensive plans right now. City of Wenatchee is involved in that. And not only do we, when asked, we have a great housing shortage now, the number of units that we need over the next 15 years the planning department planning for, we are 6,000 units short. So we have to figure out how we're going to house our natural growth, which is, you know, kids and grandkids. So the legislature set a policy and legislation of we're going to do it with infill. We're going to do it with density. And I hate density. I don't want to share my trails and my roads, but we have to do it. But in having growth and the legislature mandates that we have density, they're like, well, we have to protect our resources, our natural resources. So especially like aquifers and other natural resources. So in the comprehensive plan, in the legislative statutes, there are ways to balance growth with, you know, to make it responsible basically. So in our particular case, the pinch point is, well, what about the water? And isn't this going to contaminate the water and make it dangerous for everybody? And our scientists will testify that these advanced nitrate processing septics, that's how you do it. It reduces the impact to much less than obviously what is also allowed, just regular septics. And so anyhow, that's our balance point. And so we think that this plat ought to be allowed. because we're in compliance with state law and all that. So now for our points, the plat does meet every legal standard for approval with this, you know, contested issue of water. As you know, zone rural village, lots can be as small as 12,000 square feet. The lots here are at least 12,000 square feet or larger. The health district confirmed the property is suitable for septic. Staff report found the plat consistent with the comp plan for landward development, consistent with county code, and that it serves the public interest. The staff report's conclusion that the plat should not be approved appears to rest on that single finding of fact number 11, that the purveyor has indicated water is not available at this density. And we assert that those findings are wrong, and that the conclusions of law that flow from that are also not appropriate. And water is available, was available in 2024 when they applied for the plat. But, and pre-app, water district said, here's your letters. Those letters are only good for a year, and they expired in 2025. This report was classified, he has asked repeatedly at public meetings, please renew the water letters or give me a denial, one or the other. And there's been no response as of the date of this hearing that, or I'm sorry, as of the date of the brief, that if there would be water letters forthcoming, which we would say that's part of the water district's duty to serve. Say you're going to serve water within your retail service area, which this is well within, or say you're not, then we say that the water district must give water letter approval for this plat at the density of 11 lots, which are all over 12,000 square feet. Well, the water district is resting on, there's a 2.5 acre rule. Their lots have to be at least that big. And that position, the origin of it, the first time we've seen this in writing, something semi-official, is a letter from the board chair, the district's board chair, Stacy Shearer, the letter to the health district back in August of 25. We looked, the rule isn't found in the district's water service rules and regulations. It's not found in its wellhead protection program. We couldn't find any board resolution. We couldn't find any amendment to a governing document. So the letter from the water district to the health district, it seems to express a policy preference, not a validly promulgated rule. And our general theme is the water district doesn't have the authority to dictate lot sizes. That's a zoning function, that's a county function. And I understand the preference. I didn't want to share either, but it's what the legislature says we have to do. The water district's witnesses seem to confirm that point. Commissioner Crane's declaration states that the district will provide water for one lot here, conditioned on advanced septic treatments. And the water district engineer, Mr. Peterson, who's also here, he supports that position and says that this represents the lowest acceptable nitrate risk under a reasonable reading of the WAC, which is 246, 272, 320. But so that's what water district people say. So it seems like the water district's position is one lot's okay, but 11 is not. So we can have at least one lot within that wellhead protection area. But nobody's explained what principle of loss on insurance and yielding that's based on. And if not found in the anti-degradation policy in the WACs, on the CARA regulations, or the wellhead protection program. So Mr. Sullivan's study, our scientist, he'll answer the question of why it's safe, why it's far below state reporting threshold and below the maximum we're concerned levels. Okay, so the science supports approval of conditions. Mr. Sullivan is going to testify about his methodology and findings of that study that he conducted. He used the same state-approved methodology that Mr. Peterson from the Water District's RH2. Mr. Peterson acknowledged that it's a commonly used resource with values that are not unreasonable. So that's what Mr. Sullivan will talk more about. Mr. Sullivan is basically telling us what his study shows is that the impact is negligible compared to the amount of water in the aquifer compared to state regulations, and I could go into it, but I'll let him do that. The water district's engineer says, oh no, that's completely wrong. We come up with different findings. Mr. Sullivan will talk about why his findings are based on it. are based in science and should be accepted. But basically, you have a disputed issue of fact. That's not a basis for denying the application. It's a contested factual record. So anyways, the appropriate response to that record is conditions to address that concern. The legal arguments that the district raised don't belong in this proceeding. For example, a very smart argument, clever argument to that the Lambert itself might violate the Growth Management Act. Good legal thinking, but this is the wrong venue for it. That should be challenged through the Growth Management Hearings Board. This is not the right venue. And plus the timing, the Lambert's been around since 2006. It's too late to challenge it. They also raise the anti-degradation policy, which is a WAC that ends in 030. But that applies to ecologies. And the cases cited, they're all plaintiff versus Department of Ecology. It's how they run their things. There's no case holding that a commissioner in a county land use hearing should extend the anti-degradation policy to a plat such as this. And Department of Ecology commented on this application. Its comment was about stormwater permits. It didn't say anything about anti-degradation. Department of Health made no formal finding about any violation of safe capacity standards. So the agencies charged with protecting this aquifer have not blocked this project. So a water district that is not a regulatory agency can't step into those department shoes. So we are asking that the examiner approve this plat with 11 lots, the density requested, with the conditions of the advanced nitrogen-reducing septic systems and the maintenance agreement and the reporting of the health district and the notation on face of the plat, all those that the staff recommended that the applicant supports. And also, it looks like it may be necessary to ask that the approval be conditioned on the Malibu Water District providing a water availability letter for the plat at this density. So growth is not anything really any of us want. It's what we have to have. It's legally permitted, and this ought to be approved. And Mr. Port, would you like to come up then? Oh, and I would ask while he's coming up that he give us his statement in there with it rather than question answer, so we can get more information in a short amount of time.
Yes, and I have 19 minutes.
Thank you.
Mr. Port? Good afternoon. Could you state your name and an address for me?
John Port, 1833 North Wenatchee Avenue.
Sure, I'll have you raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury any testimony given today will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much.
My family and I own and operate real homes. We are an affordable builder, and we've built over 100 homes in the Malaga area. Malaga Water District's lead engineer, Ryan Peterson, wants to convince you and the residents of Malaga that Real Homes is responsible for the rising nitrates in wells 1 and 2. And because of that, he wants to drastically reduce the number of new homes in the Malaga area. He wants to reduce our 4-acre Malaga Meadows West subdivision from 11 homes to 1 home on a 4-acre parcel. Ryan Peterson will also try to convince you with 2 graphs in his declaration, comparing nitrate levels to new construction. In his 2 graphs, he is concluding that all nitrate increase in the Malaga Water District wells are coming only from new construction, which completely ignores agriculture and any other source of nitrates. But then in his declaration, Ryan Peterson, the author, says fertilizer runoff is a potentially dangerous source of nitrates. In the same document, he also shows orchard tracks, and in table 5.2 of his declaration, as a potential contamination source. In his declaration table, exhibit C, page 6, he shows 7 orchards and then 9 other types of potential nitrate sources, but he doesn't show any septics. Ryan Peterson was also the author of the Malaga Water District 2025 Wellhead Protection Program. And on page 11, he shows potential contamination sources for Malaga Water District wells. Again, no septics are listed, but 31 other potential contamination sources are listed, 11 of which are orchards. In the same document Ryan Peterson authored on page 8, he says excessive fertilizer and pesticides can introduce nitrates. But in his two graphs, he completely ignores agriculture and assumes that all nitrates are coming from new construction. In the year 2000, an 82-acre cherry orchard was planted where a gravel pit used to exist. This orchard was only 329 feet away from wells 1 and 2. The orchard flooded in early spring of 2024, which was most likely caused by a Microsoft well test in the fall of 2023. This test pumped 19,872,000 gallons of water into Meadow Lake, which is the source of irrigation for the 82-acre orchard. After flooding the orchard, the water then pooled in West Malaga Road, directly above wells 1 and 2. That's exhibit JJJ. All of this water would flush out all of the excess nitrogen fertilizer in this gravelly soil, and it would go straight into the aquifer just 300 feet away from wells 1 and 2. Fortunately for the aquifer, all 82 acres of the orchard have been removed. Sabi bought the property. It's going to be Malaga's 7th data center. Ryan Peterson, the Water District's lead engineer, also ignored multiple studies regarding nitrates completed by Washington Department of Health, Washington State Department of Agriculture, Washington State University, and also articles from Washington State University and the Good Fruit Grower. Washington State University states agricultural fertilizer is the number one source of nitrates in groundwater. Two-thirds of nitrogen pollution in the U.S. is ag runoff. 80% of fertilizer is lost to the environment. It goes right through. All of these tests show nitrates caused by septic systems are about 2% versus nitrates from irrigated agriculture runoff is 64 to 66%. But again, he thinks that the nitrates are coming from these new construction. The Department of Health did a really extensive study in Yakima. The underground study shows the number of septics involved in their testing, and they included 6,044 septic systems, which is approximately 20 times more than exist in the Malaga Water District's wellhead protection area. Ryan Peterson, the Water District's lead engineer, also completely ignores the Three Lakes Wellhead Protection Area. The Three Lakes Wellhead Protection Area and the newly expanded Malaga Water District Wellhead Protection Area, they almost touch. Three Lakes has 402 homes. Every one of them with septics inside their wellhead protection area, but they don't have a lot of orchards. That's exhibit R. The majority of these septic systems are old. They've been there since the 70s and 80s. The Three Lakes well was tested July 1st, 2025, and it had a super low 0.842 nitrate level. In stark contrast, one of the Malaga Water District's own wells, which was surrounded by orchards, showed nitrate levels of 7.08 in 2003 and 6.7 in 2007. This is the district's own well with much higher nitrates than their wells, 1 and 2, but it's not mentioned in any of Ryan Peterson's report because it doesn't fit his theory. One extreme example of nitrate levels just a short distance away at 4862 Stumilk Creek Road is the Shiflett Orchard wells. In 2023, they showed a 12.5 nitrate level, and in 2024, they showed a 15.00 nitrate level. This well is surrounded by orchards, no new construction for miles. These nitrates are three times the nitrate levels of Malaga Water District's wells 1 and 2. Now, all of this data, it's easy to find on the Department of Health website. However, it does not fit Ryan Peterson's theory, so you won't see any of it in his declaration. All to point out is the AMG aluminum well. It's just a short distance away from Malaga Water District's wells 1 and 2. They had a 6.17 nitrate level, again, higher than Malaga Water District's wells, but this level was in 2001. That's 7 years before new construction started in the area. So as you can see, there's a lot of information available with the Water District lead engineer Brian Peterson could have found, but they don't fit his theory that new construction is causing the nitrate increase. Now, besides all of this previous data, there are two even more obvious. In 2023, the Malaga Water District's employees installed at its office an unpermitted illegal septic system that is within 100 feet of wells 1 and 2. Prior to this, the Malaga Water District was using porta potties at their office. So for 3 years, they have been using this illegal system. An example of how serious this is, one of the neighbors at 3056 Firehouse Road, who did get a permit through the health district, he was required to stay 200 feet away from these same wells. The Chelan Douglas Health District, Richmond Petty, has been aware of this and has tried to get them in compliance. Richmond told us in an email March 10th, 2025, that the water district will be abandoning this unpermitted system and will revert to porta potties. Carrie Yonda with the State Department of Health told us in an email that Richmond Petty informed me Chelan Douglas Health Districts have issued 2 civil citations to Malaga Water District in an effort to get them in compliance. As of this morning, the illegal septic system is still in use. No porta potties on site. Last, but definitely not the least, is an illegal landfill on Malaga Water District property off of West Malaga Road. This landfill is within 100 feet of their wellheads. They got 2 violation letters from Chelan Douglas Health District dated February 4th, 26 and 3/25/26. Both of these letters show concern of lead and arsenic. The Chelan Douglas Health District got the state involved, and in an internal memo between the state and Chelan Douglas Health District, they say, "This is outside of water resource regulations. I think solid waste or hazardous waste needs to get involved. We will provide support to the local health district, but this needs to be sent to the toxics program and also hazardous waste to determine if there are any hazardous materials being dumped." In another internal memo, Brian Dickey to Javier Ramos, both with Chelan Douglas Health District, in addition, it appears that there are piles of soil in the vicinity of well points. I remind you that if soil was imported from Old Orchard, which may contain high concentrations of lead and or arsenic, they must not be within 100 feet of well points. I recommend exercising an abundance of caution and simply remove all the soil piles out of the sanitary control area. This illegal landfill was supposed to be removed April 10th, just 5 days ago, or the received $500 a day fines. As of this morning, it's still there. There's no barrier of any kind to stop the dumping. So as you can see, there are many.
Just a second, Mr. Port, 8 minutes.
Oh, thank you. 8 minutes left.
Of your 30.
Yes.
As you can see, there are many other much more likely sources of nitrate increases. The 82-acre flooded cherry orchard, the water district's own illegal septic, illegal landfill and their well field. However, Ryan Peterson, RH2, and the Malaga Water District Commissioners, they focus all of their attention and effort trying to prove that the construction a half a mile away is the only cause. They started a propaganda campaign of public meetings, scare tactic flyers they posted throughout Malaga. They sent letters to the homes of the district customers, and they purposely manipulated charts and graphs showing that nitrate concentration will be off the charts if another house is built inside their wellhead protection area. Now, I've created my own chart, and it shows a direct correlation with the peaks in nitrates in the year 2000 from the 82-acre cherry orchard, and then another spike in 2024, which correlates with the illegal sewage system in 23 and the Microsoft test in 2023, and the resulting flood of the orchard in spring. Our company did everything Chelan County asked us to do. We completed our application. On December 2nd, 24, we provided a very extensive CARA report. Chelan County told us we had a complete application on December 16th, 2024. Then on December 19th, 2024, a notice of application was issued by Chelan County. County staff said the project remains consistent with the rural village zoning and the Chelan County comprehensive plan. They recommended approval with standard conditions. That was on August 21st, 2025. Chelan Douglas Health District, Richmond Petty, also recommended approval on February 14th, 2025. We had everything done, everything we needed. Until August 21st, 2025, Stacy Shear, Malaga Water 6 Chairman of the Board, writes Richmond Petty a letter. In this letter, Stacy Shear tells Richmond Petty a blatant untruth. She says, subject to the requirements set forth in our district rules and regulations, our district can provide water service to individual lots within our district wellhead protection area that are 2.5 acres or larger. The CDHD accepted the statement from Stacy Shear to be true. It is not true. There's nothing like this requirement in the Water District's most recent rules and regulations, and nothing like this requirement in their 2025 wellhead protection area. The Water District Board did not make a motion. They didn't vote on this requirement. The only place you will find anything like this requirement in writing is the Stacy Shear letter itself. So the Health District reversed course. They still approved the subdivision as long as we build only one home, not 11. Same thing that Stacy Shear asked for. Of course, Chelan County staff, after receiving the Health District's newly revised memo, they did the same. They now did not recommend an approval. So two public agencies went from approvals to disapproval, 11 homes to one home, all based on one untruthful letter. And the timing of this letter is also something to note. It was presented to the Health District the day after the appeal period ended for the conditional use permit for the 5 Microsoft wells installed. It's obvious if they tried to do this before the conditional use permit was granted, everyone would realize that the wells were not compatible with the Lambert, the Chelan County Comprehensive Plan, or current zoning. The Water District is using the cheapest and most inaccurate method to delineate where the wellhead protection area is. It's called a calculated fixed radius, which is a big circle surrounding the well that grows bigger the more water you use. Right now at 650 plus acres, they are not counting the 7 data centers that are planned. Each center uses 121,000 gallons a day. That's in a year, once they're all online, it'll be 309,155,000 gallons per year. This circle will become gigantic in the next few years. Estimates for a sewer system are 6 to 10 years away at the earliest. If Malaga Water District and RH2 get what they want, it will shut down any new construction for many years because of these data centers. But it will also guarantee more water available for Microsoft and Sabie. I want it to be in the record that we made a public records request from the Malaga Water District on December 4th, 2025. Just as I walked in the door, I was handed a small computer thing. 4.5 months later, we have received nothing. Real Homes is a small local builder. We don't have the money to fight against a multi-billion dollar company. RH2 and Malaga Water District have received millions of dollars and will continue to receive millions of dollars for many years while these 6 data centers are being built. Now, Mr. Kotkamp, I realize we can't build lots for these homes without water. I'm hoping you see past this one untruthful letter and will approve these 11 homes for Malaga.
Okay. You don't want to offer anything from your expert at this time?
We're going to do an expert for the next 30 minutes.
All right. Okay, we'll turn this over to the Water District then at this point.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your name and address, please.
Tyler Hotchkiss, 124 North Wenatchee Avenue, Suite A, Wenatchee, Washington.
Mr. Hotchkiss, are you going to be providing any testimony today?
No.
All right. What would you like to tell me?
May it please the examiner, this is Tyler Hotchkiss on behalf of the Malaga Water District. Due to recent construction and planned development of homes on top of or near the wells and aquifer at issue, a wave of nitrates is coming to the only source of water for Malaga residents. This should concern everyone. The question is not whether the nitrates therefrom or from any other source will hit the aquifer, but when and how much. It appears even the applicant today understands that there are a wave of nitrates coming. Now, the parties disagree about where those nitrates are coming from. It appears that the applicant believes they are coming from orchards, but nonetheless, it appears without doubt that that wave is coming. And it is potentially a tsunami. This is the only source of water for the Malaga area. That is that if this source is contaminated, it is permanent and we cannot go back. So while it is Mr. Port's job to build homes, it is the Malaga Water District's job to protect the aquifer. And that is what we are here today doing. Due to the factual concerns here at issue, as well as legal realities, including violations of the county code, state law, and the comprehensive plan, the county, the health district, and the Malaga Water District all agree. Homes to be built should be limited to one home in Malaga Meadows West. I will address first the ways in which this application does not comply with the law. There are four ways in which this application, in our opinion, is not approvable by the examiner. One is that it's not in compliance with county code. Pursuant to county code provision 1204020, there are no major subdivisions allowed within the wellhead protection area. The applicant wants to indicate that this was all surprise in 2025 when the wellhead protection area came to be. But that's simply not true. If you look at the applicant's own exhibits, exhibit KKK0553, Ms. Foreman, all the way on July 11th, 2024, Ms. Foreman from our office, on behalf of the Malaga Water District, details concerns regarding the wellhead protection area. This eventually led to the CARA analysis. So while the applicant wants to talk about how they simply did not know about this until the 2025, and this sprang out of nowhere, it simply isn't true as a fact in the record. Ms. Foreman wrote that letter on July 11, 2024, at the same time, or roughly the same time, that the water certificate availability was issued. The fact is that the application simply does not comply with 1204020E and 1F, and that is in our brief on page 7 and page 8. Additionally, it is under the county code, it is the protection of the aquifers that is essential. This is language in the code, essential to the quality of life of the residents of the Malaga Water District. And it is that important for the application here to recognize that it does not comply with the county code provisions 1177-0105. That argument is on the top of page 8 of the brief and does not comply with RCW 9054-140. RCW 9054-140 states that it is the uppermost, this is quoted language, uppermost priority of the county to protect the groundwater aquifer. And so regardless of where we think these nitrates are coming from is irrelevant. It is the uppermost priority of the county to protect the groundwater quality. We are all charged with that. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, that the application does not comply. As far as state law goes, it is not in compliance with state law and the anti-degradation policy. Applicant makes some statement that the Department of Ecology is not here. What the applicant fails to recognize, however, is the policies, the rules and regulations of the Malaga Water District make it so that anytime there is a violation of county code, then they do not have to provide service. That is, the duty to serve is accepted if the county code is not complied with. The county code itself incorporates provisions of state law. And so by proxy, then if you do not comply with the state law, you do not comply with the county code, and you do not comply with the Malaga Water District rules and regulations. As such, there really is no need for the Department of Ecology to be here. If it doesn't comply with the Department of Ecology's rules and regulations, or the rules and regulations set out, that is particularly WAC 173-200-030, which increases nitrates in the area, there is no further need to do much else. It is not consistent with the comprehensive plan. That argument is on, it does not, on page 11 and 12 of the brief, it does not preserve and protect critical areas. It does not protect water quality or maintain safe potable water or prevent groundwater contamination in critical areas. None of these things have been challenged by the applicant. I think probably the most important one, however, and this is not in the brief, so I've asked the hearing examiner to pay particular attention to this part, is that the county code does not have the county does not have the authority to overrule the health district in this particular area. And that's County Code Provision 408-100, which just talks about approval of subdivision by the health district. It says all development, whether as a subdivision, other residential, commercial, or industrial adjacent to any body of water, stream, river, lake, or reservoir, shall require the Chelan Health District approval. In this particular case, there's no question. The Chelan Health District has deferred to the Malaga Water District. We do not approve, therefore they do not approve. Therefore, there simply is no discretion. This cannot be approved. As to the factual allegations here, we'll call, time permitting, we'll call Mr. Peterson, who is the engineer. But all of these things have a basis in fact. The one house per 2.5 acres, they talk about this being, the applicant talk about this being arbitrary and capricious. As we know, arbitrary.
Can I ask you a question? I'm just I don't want to dwell on it too long, but
yeah.
You're saying that the Chelan Douglas Health District, and I think the paperwork supports this, deferred, saying we have no opinion on this, Malaga Water District, whatever you want to do, we'll support.
Yep.
What authority do they have to relinquish their responsibility and then have Malaga Water District make whatever findings they want to make that are now going to be a basis for denial of the project? So I don't know if I'm stating that clearly enough, but the basic question is, what authority does the health district have to say, whether it's Malaga Water District or Stamilk Growers or anybody else, you guys make the call. We don't want to do it. What authority is there?
Your Honor, I think they have a authority in discretion as long as it's reasonable, right? And if we're relying upon sound science and sound theories, right? Sound factual allegations, I think the only standard here, in my opinion, Your Honor, is arbitrary and capricious. And if they defer that authority and it is sound, both logically and factually, then I think it absolutely they have that authority.
Okay.
And so, you know, but I think Your Honor's point doesn't go unnoticed, right? If they're deferring to Stamil, say, or some other other entity that doesn't have the requisite science, knowledge, or legal authority, then there might be an issue. In this particular case, we believe they've relied soundly on our conclusions. But I understand the okay. Examiner's point. Your Honor, as far as the limitations imposed, the one house per 2.5 acres isn't pulled out of thin air. It's not arbitrary and capricious. It's actually pursuant to WAC 246-272A-0320. This is actually detailed in Ryan's declaration. This is a specific on-site septic system policy in which where there is a source of water near, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but where there is a source of water near, then it's limited to one house per every 2.5 acres, right? That Mr. Peterson will talk about the science of that. And then as far as we're requiring advanced nitrate septic systems, which shall reduce total nitrogen by 60% and nitrates by 80%, as well as detailed effluent monitoring and regulatory compliance. And that's all in Ryan's declaration. One other thing I think I'd point out, there's this reference in briefs that, and I think this will come out in Mr. Solomon's testimony, but that there's only a 0.16 milligram per liter increase. That is not a defensible number, Your Honor. That was from a report that was superseded by a November 11, 2024 report, which was superseded by a separate report that Mr. Solomon put up in February of 2025. So I believe that the testimony will be today that that is not a defensible number. The real number is 1.2 milligrams per liter, all for 11 homes, all from a support to build on. I would submit to the court, Mr. Port spent a lot of time talking today about nitrates. I will support that there's nothing in the record that supports Mr. Port being any kind of nitrate expert or having any kind of qualifications to talk about these things. I would submit to the the court that it should just not consider them. I think from the beginning, the applicant at its convenience has ignored the wellhead protection area and the regulations related thereto. I think the applicant has ignored the WAC 246-272-803-2-0, which talks about one house per every 2.5 acres.
What's that site again, just so I write it down?
WAC 246-272-803-2-0.
Okay.
And I think, you know, for those reasons, Your Honor, because they've never really been addressed, and this is aside from the legal issues before the court, I don't think this court can approve it, the application, factually either. I would like to reserve the time, the rest of my time, for Mr. Peterson.
All right. You want to call a witness, I take it?
Yes. Well, Mr. Ryan Peterson. How much time do you have, Mr. Peterson?
18 minutes. Okay. All right, sir, can you state your name and spell your first and last for me?
Peterson, R-Y-A-N-P-E-P-E-R-S-O-N.
And a work address for you?
300 Simon Street, East Wenatchee.
All right. If you raise your right hand, do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury any testimony given today will be the truth?
I do.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peterson. Ms. Peterson, we don't have a lot of time, so I won't belabor the record, but are your qualifications detailed in the written material submitted in this matter?
I'm a professional engineer of 36 years, working in primarily in this area. I believe that's stated in that.
Okay. And are you qualified to discuss nitrates as they relate into the current situation?
I am.
Okay. Are all your opinions here today on a more probable than not basis to a reasonable degree of a scientific certainty?
I got to stop this because I think you got your professional engineer, but then you said scientific certainty. Is there a difference between professional engineer expertise and scientific? I don't want to let that just go undiscussed.
Sure.
Checking out with the data that I have been providing within the reports that I consider scientific because it's primarily data, not interpretations.
Okay.
So what regulations allow you to speak to nitrates as they relate to public health and systems?
As a professional engineer, I have a responsibility and a right to speak to technical issues to which I am accustomed and I work with.
Do you believe the application here at issue qualifies from a scientific standpoint to be approved?
The application for the
yes. Why not?
I believe the evaluation presented for evaluation of impacts on nitrates, the discussions within it regarding hydrogeology groundwater, I have no dispute with. I dispute with conclusions. We come to very different conclusions with the information. I feel like the data set used is incomplete within that report. We have a large data set, and I think it is the actual real world data is compelling enough that you should not be taking the risk to further contaminate groundwater, which is already at risk.
Is there any dispute here, even with Mr. Sullivan, that the buildings here at issue will contribute to nitrates in the aquifer?
Dispute. I think so.
Is there any dispute that the buildings at issue will result in an increase in nitrates to the aquifer?
No dispute that there will be an increase. The only question is how much?
Okay. And so it's not a matter of if it will affect the aquifer, but how much and when. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. And so that's the nature of the dispute here between you and, say, Mr. Sullivan. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. As we run through, you said that you dispute his conclusions. What conclusions are those, Mr. Peterson?
So the car report is the primary goal of that is to establish vulnerability, not the vulnerability is a combination of susceptibility, meaning can not be contaminated? And then on top of that, is there a contaminant? The two criteria is what the status of vulnerability. And the conclusion in the report of the vulnerability is I dispute that. I consider the vulnerability to be high.
Does the Department of Health agree with you that the aquifers here are of high vulnerability?
They agree that they are of high susceptibility.
And
I don't know that they're deluding the Department of Health to say vulnerabilities.
Okay, what does it mean to have high susceptibility?
Susceptibility means the conditions are such that if there is a contaminant, there is a high likelihood that the aquifer could be contaminated. For example, if the ground was coarse gravel, something that allows contaminants to travel through relatively easily. And the Department of Health has established that the wells have high susceptibility.
Okay. And so that's supported by the Department of Health. Did you do your own analysis in that regard, or do you rely upon the Department of Health to make that analysis?
I reviewed the analysis that had been previously.
Okay. And did you agree with that analysis? There's been reference here in this matter to a 0.16 milligrams per liter as an increase in the nitrates to the aquifer. Do you recall that? Okay. Tell me where that came from.
That was from the first version of the prior report for this project that we received.
Okay. And was that, tell me what happened after you received that number.
As I reviewed it, I looked through that information. This all specifically comes from a spreadsheet that is provided by Department of Health. And I looked at some of the data entry error issues, values. I did not agree with some of them. I called Bill, who I've known for a very long time, and we discussed the values, and he agreed to review and modify a couple of them.
And did he review and modify them?
Yes.
Okay, and what was the second conclusion about the amount of nitrates going into the aquifer?
Second, meaning the result of that?
Yes.
The revised spreadsheet came up and provided 1.2 milligrams per liter increase in susceptibility.
Okay, and I'm handing you what's been marked as LLL 0628 as the exhibit. That is the spreadsheet originally that Mr. Sullivan provided to you that he agreed with you was an error, correct? And as it relates to that 1.2 milligrams per liter number, could you, is there a range of inputs that you can put in there in particular?
There's a wide range.
Okay. And if you put that wide range at the very top of what the potential reasonable ranges are, what would you come up with?
I could come up with 5, 6, 7 times that.
Okay. So it could be, in your opinion, it could be that the nitrates to be leached into the water could be 5 to 6 to 7 times higher than the 1.2 milligrams per liter.
Could be. That's on the extreme end, but the values you put in are defensible and real.
Okay. And so you're not necessarily challenging that the values that Mr. Sullivan put in are defensible. Is that fair?
Correct.
You're just saying that other values that you could put in that would likewise be defensible could be 6 to 7 times more.
Correct.
The report that ultimately Sullivan did provide indicated that his original analysis, that is the analysis from November of 2024, was superseded by the February 11, 2025 analysis. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Where did the one house for 2.5 acres come from?
From the WAC 2 referenced.
WAC 2?
2, 4, 6, 2, 7, 2, 8, 8, 1, 8.
Okay. Good memory. have you read the science behind that regulation? Tell me about that.
Yeah. Anybody who has insomnia, it's good reading. So I read the documentation behind the development of the lab, and just the lab that I believe took place last year. Many were developed with multiple interests, agencies, developers, public officials, create a rule that would cover most situations. to provide guidance without having, without every single one that you have to be exhausted by it, which I think all about how the style stuff is service. And the state that those various interests and then develop the rule based off whatever priorities they chose to use, you know, balancing public health versus housing versus whatever other interests. And that they came up with that conclusion. The WAC also includes authorization where the local health officer can exceed those standards if they have information that they believe is knowing to do something.
And so the establishment of one house for 2.5 acres, is that in your mind established upon scientific evidence?
Yeah.
And you've reviewed that evidence, understand that evidence, and that's why you indicated your preference to rely upon WAC 246-272-A320, correct?
Yeah.
How much time do I have left, Mr. Dugan?
Right around 8 minutes.
Yes. There's been criticism, of course, that you heard when Mr. Port was here, correct?
Oh, I haven't heard my name that many times in one day.
Okay. And what was the, I guess, what response do you have, if any, to the criticism?
Okay, yes, I didn't write notes. Most of it is taken out of context and extrapolating things and missing things that I've heard of them. So it's hard to say there was so much that I don't know what else to say other than I disagree with it. Most of it.
There's been reference to a 2 milligram per liter impact is minimal. Do you recall that?
Please.
Okay. What opinion, if any, do you have on that?
It is a value that's used very much out of context in this application. It is stated one place only that I'm aware of, and that is in instructions to how to use the spreadsheet prepared by Department of Health. The spreadsheet is not truly applicable to this project. However, I agree that it is a very easy to use tool that people know about. But even according to Department of Health, this is a tool. It is one thing to look at. It is not the end-all be-all. And the 2 milligram per liter, again, is the instructions to a spreadsheet. It is not a target. It's not a value that, as long as you're under that, everything's okay. One example I give is like if you have, let's say, an NGS or a level of 9, and you add a 2, that's not a de minimis increase. That is a drastic and dangerous and expensive increase. You can't look at that number as just the end all be all number of times. And again, so you can say this tool, I've seen Tom Tyler today. It's one tool. You know, I can say, I have a screwdriver, so I'm going to build a house. You know, you need more tools. It's one indicator that can be used to determine if there should be more effort before.
Does the Department of Health agree with you in that regard?
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes. So the comment period is made up thereof is that this is Department of Health position. And the thing on 2 is minor, which it doesn't say because it says 2 is considered moderate. You might call that nuanced, but the true language is it says, in general, a raise above 2.0 milligrams per liter would be considered moderate impact. That's what it says. Any other language to rephrase it is language to rephrase it. And the like I said, you can't put that in a standalone context, but it depends on what you're adding that to. Also, I contacted Department of Health to actually ask them the question, said, I'd like to know, is this consistent with Department of Health's position? I contacted, I believe, Ashley BB at the OH Nitrate Department. She gave me an answer that said, I agree with your position that you can't just use that number as a standalone number, especially if it exceeds the trigger threshold. And she forwarded it into, and I can't remember the original same name. It's in
Mr. Jones.
Yes, thank you. To the loss department, which he says is more applicable to this, to get feedback. And he sent a larger, longer email, which is very good, which discusses that value, but also very clearly discusses where he says it's one tool. It is an indicator what did we use to look to see if more evaluation should be done. But it's also in the context of what's called a loss of large on-site septic system, which is not this. But it's a convenient and easy to use spreadsheet. And so I don't see the use of it because it gives, here's a thing that people have seen and used, and it's fine. What it does indicate is that there is a real chance of an increase to nitrates to the brain. That's what I feel is the most important result of that. That information.
Okay. Is it within your realm of authority to consider whether or not there's a housing shortage in Cheyenne County when you make your determinations? Okay. So your opinions here are based upon not only factual allegations, but also code, regardless of whether there's a housing shortage. Is that correct?
Right. And my primary duty as a public as professional engineer is protection of public health. I took it out.
And is that what your testimony is here today regarding the public health? 3 minutes. Can I reserve that?
By the way, for 5 minutes, I have Tourette's. So if anybody thinks like I'm winking or something, I'm not. I realize it's uncomfortable looking at
that. No, irrelevant to me.
Now you're winking, by the way.
I don't have any more testimony from Mr. Peterson.
Okay. There will be cross-exam.
Okay.
And I will allow you to ask redirect questions. Is there any cross?
Not at the moment.
No. Well, this is the only time.
Okay.
So
there's no cross.
No cross. All right.
I don't have anything else at this time.
Okay. Let me think just a second. I find myself when I read things, I read one thing, and then when I hear it, all of a sudden it kind of makes takes on a different kind of sense. What this Department of Health, you know, the thing you said is just one tool. What are the other tools that are used to evaluate the maximum nitrate level?
It gets more involved into more exploration of available information, and then it could even go to the level of actually needing to drill monitoring wells and do more actual testing within any particular areas, especially. If someone's going to build a loss system, they may actually require monitoring all the road in the area that that's going in. Loss system, think of that as just a really, really, really big septic system for multiple. So it goes from this very cursory, you know, across the board look at it that then you always look at and say, okay, if they think something is not a big deal, they will still require more because this is a long process in for the loss system. And then they will look at whether you need to actually go to the level of actually doing more. I'm saying maybe drilling and testing. It just depends on the project and what it is.
Okay, that helps. And then the last question that I would have is the septic systems being proposed for these are, for lack of my better word, because I'm not a scientist or engineer, they're special ones, and they're supposed to decrease nitrate.
Yes.
Deposits into the system. Do you disagree with how much nitrates will be after treated will be released into the system that may over the course of years enter the aquifer?
It's a difficult question to answer because these systems are, even though they're available on an individual house basis, test data is generally on large versions of these where you have multiple homes going into a single system where they can do quite a bit of testing. So the smaller these get, the less reliable in terms of performance they're going to be. And there's very little that I found on that. So we kind of had to extrapolate from their larger systems as to what they can actually do. So try to be generous and assume that the manufacturers were claims as far as the big systems more or less translate down to the little systems, but they even state that these are, you know, this test data is on the off-market systems. The other difficult part is if you're looking at the individual systems for homeowners is, you know, how is it verified, how it is tracked, you know, because then you put he doesn't need to put it in and walk away. You know, they're serviceable equipment and their performance needs to be checked. And so far there's been no proposals for how exactly is that tracked? How is that checked? What is the remediation if they are not working? I want to believe that there that all these can be answered. It just has there's no opposition to those, but there needs to be a procedure in place to verify the work.
And you're not familiar that the people offering these units for sale have that built into the system?
They all seem to have an annual service and testing policy, but it also needs to be tracked kind of locally, and they understand what happens if they're not working. And that system just hasn't been presented as here's how we want to approach it. I don't say it doesn't exist, it hasn't been presented.
Got it. All right, thank you very much. Any questions based on my questions?
I was surprised to hear you say that the smaller ones are less reliable than the larger ones.
Less reliable. If I use that word, that was wrong. Less predictable, maybe would be a better word. Is that because individual homes are one home's different than another home, whereas you start grouping things together and the law of averages, things start being more predictable. For example, if one person in one home versus six people in one home, to kind of give an example, or they have different, maybe they, I don't know, maybe different.
Doesn't that average out over
a
set of them?
It can, but my point is, I can't say that if we have four of these, each of these is going to be exactly the same.
Right.
That
makes sense. All right. Any redirect, Mr. Hotchkiss?
No.
Mr. Peterson, thank you very much for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we're going to turn this over to the public now. And let's start with the people that are here present in the room. Is there anybody that came today that wants to testify? If so, you can use...
I have a public comment that I submitted, I thought, before... I went on vacation last week, and I didn't hear you call it out when you were naming the rest of the public comments.
Well, there were some that were just lumped into public comments. But if you want to submit that again, then we will call that. And what was your name? I'm sorry.
Sharon Seal. I represent my mom's estate of 106 acres, 90% of which is in the wildlife protection zone that's
okay, I will give that to staff. Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to offer any live testimony? All right. Is there anybody online? We'll let staff go through the folks that are online. Oh, I thought I saw a whole bunch of...
Yes, but that would be great.
All right. If anybody wants to testify that's online, you need to unmute yourself or raise your hand. And I'm looking, I'm seeing some experts that have been retained. But this is the time for any member of the public to provide testimony if you'd like to. You're muted, so you'll have to unmute yourself.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. David Krause. Is this time that is appropriate for me to testify?
Well, you're here for the with the applicant, so if you...
Wildlife Water District.
Or I'm sorry, with the Water District. So it's not really public testimony. Mr. Hotchkiss, did you want this gentleman to testify for...
Your Honor, he's only here to the extent that Your Honor has any questions related.
I do not have any questions for him.
Okay. I realize I've used up my time, and so I'll defer that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Was there anybody else that's online that's a member of the public that wishes to testify? And... All right. Not seeing anything. Is there anything further from staff?
Nothing further at this time.
All right. So we'll go back to the applicant. And refreshing my recollection, we had a total of an hour, and we used up, didn't write that down. We'll say we used up the 30 minutes, so you have 30 minutes.
Sounds fair. Your Honor, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bill Sullivan. Would you state your name for the record and your address?
Bill Sullivan, work address,
yeah.
106 North Columbia, Wenatchee.
All right, sir, have you raised your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury any testimony you give today will be the truth? Thank you very much. Go ahead and have a seat, and you're going to do question and answer, or is it more of a narrative? Whatever you want to do.
Start with a couple of questions. And first of all, what are your scientific qualifications?
Your Honor, I just want to apologize for stepping out a couple times. I've been facing an extraordinary personal challenge today. So I apologize for interrupting proceedings from time to time. I'm a Washington State licensed hydrogeologist number 2736. I've been working in this field for over 20 years, studying groundwater throughout the state of Washington, most specifically here in North Central Washington. I do work throughout the state. For example, in North Central Washington, I was hired to help update the county's critical aquifer recharge area code. Chapter 1182, called the AROD, Aquifer Recharge Area Overlay District. I also, last year, helped Chelan Douglas Health District update the local health code to comply with the changes to WAC 246-272A-0320, that was referenced earlier, that's otherwise known as the septic code, or the OSS code, OSS being on-site sewage system. I've done a number of these projects, doing one, for example, right now, going to be starting one over on Libby Island, very similar to this, and all the same criteria with the regulatory setting, same numbers that are put out there, the 2 milligrams per liter, the 5 milligrams per liter, these are all coming up through the local health jurisdiction that's requiring the study in that particular case. So these are everything that I have presented in my two pieces of work that are body of evidence. Those are consistent with the regulatory framework. So I'm sorry.
No, we wanted to know your qualifications. Mm-hmm. So what are your, do you have any expertise in nitrates?
I'm a hydrogeologist by training, a couple degrees in geology, advanced degree, and then of course by licensure and experience. Most of my work is in water quantity, so characterizing the movement of water through geologic media, sand, gravel, clay, whatever it is, and a lesser extent of that concerns water quality, and then a fraction of that concerns nitrates.
Okay, so it's within your ambit of what you do.
It's in within my licensure and my experience.
What about, you said that you helped update some codes, so you have some familiarity with WACs and all these codes that have been referenced?
Well, the work that was done in support of this project was done in response to the regulatory requirements. And so we met those, and I can explain to you what those are, if you like.
And any scientific opinions that you offer today, would you say that you would offer them like more probable than not, beyond a reasonable doubt? But would you say they're beyond more probable than not that your opinion is correct?
Okay, so a few concepts. again, contrasting myself to an engineer, Ryan is an excellent water systems engineer, hydraulics, pipes, pumps. He's well known throughout this area, but he is not a groundwater scientist. As science is a little bit different than engineering. Engineering, you can largely quantify your setting, your parameters. Science leaves open a lot of things to interpretation based on evidence. And so I apply a multiple lines of evidence approach using various data from various sources. And then we use develop a defensible estimate based on the available information. And in other words, you might call that the scientific method. I practice the scientific method on a daily basis. It's scientific method, evidence-based approach for investigating groundwater phenomena by forming hypotheses, testing them through the collection and analysis of data to produce repeatable and defensible findings and conclusions. And so the work I've submitted follows the scientific method. It includes information that's required not only from a regulatory standpoint, but it's required to meet our standards that it is standalone. It can be repeated if you look at the documents that I've submitted. All the input data are in there. Assumptions are called out so that you don't have to guess why we are pointing towards certain estimates instead of others. And so in doing that, I consider my work to be highly defensible.
Do you ever talk in absolutes?
As a scientist, I try not to. I never talk in absolutes.
Never?
Yeah, you got it. I make every attempt not to. Some I try to teach my children as well. In science, it's just bad practice. And when you see things called out in absolutes, it's usually unfavorable.
Okay. So what? Why were you involved in this project? What were you called to do?
So what triggered the regulatory trigger for this project is county's Chelan County Code Chapter 1182, the Aquifer Recharge Area Overlay District. It's a GMA requirement that's triggered by certain development activities or their proximity to certain features, highly permeable soils, previously mapped CARA or critical aquifer recharge area, a sole source aquifer designated by the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. By the way, we have none in Chelan County. You'll hear people saying it's in some of the submitted literature by the other side that this is a sole source aquifer. That's actually technically not accurate. And that's not the reason why we had to do a CARA. But also if—
Why isn't that accurate?
Because there are no Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, EPA designated sole source aquifers in Chelan County. I'll give an example, the Rattler Mop for in Spokane County. If that's the only source of water, there are actually other sources of water here. So it has to be designated by DEPA and it's not.
Okay.
And so anyway, if a project is proximal to a wellhead protection area, then that also triggers a county CARA report. So we did that.
I have another question for you. Wellhead protection area and this 100-foot sanitation control easement, is that kind of the same thing?
They are not. So every public well has a 100-foot radius around it. And it's a very strict radius designated in code for called a sanitary control area. I'll refer to it as an SCA. And there's basically nothing that can happen within that. The water system has to have full control over that. And there's really no development that can happen in that 100-foot radius. A wellhead protection area is a planning tool used by a water system when they are applying through Department of Health for permission, I'll say, for approval of a new well. And in doing so, they need to establish a larger radius that's kind of a planning radius so that they know where is a good place beside a well and what's the potential inventory of potential contaminants within that radius. And so the wellhead protection area, the radius for Malaga Water District wells has expanded. It's out to 2,000 feet and it goes in all directions in 2,000 feet. And that's an advisement area. Again, that's not a management area. Water systems don't have regulatory authority in the wellhead protection area, nor does Department of Health, nor Department of Ecology. It's an advisement zone to help a water district site the well. And so they need to be thinking about these things to a great extent ahead of time before the well is drilled and sited.
Well, it sounds like it's something they regulate. I don't understand the difference.
Well, it's not regulated because you can't necessarily regulate it after the fact. For example, the Malaga the Malaga Lanyard went into effect 20 years ago. And Malaga Water District has since developed a expensive and a robust well field within smack dab in the middle of the Malaga Lanyard, which by definition being more intensive rural development means it's going to be smaller lots, septic tanks, septic systems, et cetera. And so if you look back in the Malaga Water District water system plan, when they were getting permission approval from Department of Health to site these wells, you will see that they were required to and that they did contemplate the local underlying zoning code. So this was already something that the water system would have acknowledged. And in all the previous information that I reviewed up to the past few months when this became kind of a controversy, I didn't see anything where Malaga Water District identified the potential high density or higher density development of rural lots as being an issue.
Okay.
I can talk about the science if you like.
Well, I do want to ask you, like, why you chose the method you used and what you did and why it was even necessary to call you in.
Okay. So again, what triggered this was this CARA requirement. It's a county code requirement that's driven by GMA. All the counties, all the municipalities have this. And so what we did is we did a robust hydrogeologic study of half mile radius of the site, the Malaga Meadows West. And looked at various data, and I won't necessarily go into that right now. The information's in the report. Long story short, we found out there developed a geologic conceptual model for the quantifying, kind of characterizing the groundwater resources. And I'll try to explain it here graphically, with my hands. What it consists of, from ground surface down, it consists of about 140 feet of largely unsaturated sediments overlying what I'll call a regional aquifer that's in hydraulic continuity with Columbia River. So this is a prolific sand and gravel aquifer, anywhere from 60 to 100 feet thick of saturated water in sand and gravel in continuity and recharged by the Columbia River that is flowing through that Malaga area. Up above that, there's about 140 feet of soil, including some layers of sand and gravel, including a couple layers of small saturated, what we call perched groundwater layers, up closer to the surface. And so that creates a setting where we would say that's a relatively thick vadose zone or thick unsaturated zone. And so as part of this CARA report to meet the county requirement, to Ryan's point, we needed to characterize the susceptibility of the aquifer to contamination. So the physical, what are the physical properties of the aquifer to make it either resistant or prone to contamination? And, I came up with a low to moderate susceptibility of the underlying physical aquifer based on this vadose zone that's 140 feet thick, the presence of relatively coarse soils in some areas, fine grain layers that will slow the vertical infiltration of material and absorption of contaminants as they flow down. There are various processes that occur as water makes its tortuous path and slow path down into the subsurface. And there are biochemical, and chemical, geochemical processes that take place before contaminants get to the groundwater. And the gist of it is, all this was rolled up into an aquifer vulnerability assessment, or how vulnerable is the site, is the aquifer to the actual development that is proposed. And so given the underlying susceptibility of the aquifer and what I would call a relatively low risk of contamination from a residential development, I think that's widely agreed. Residential developments are different than landfills and junkyards and meat processing plants and fruit processing, et cetera. They're not known, and I can list the reasons why, but they're not known for a great deal of vulnerable susceptibility of contamination to the aquifer. There is one issue, though, that needs to be evaluated, and that's nitrates from on-site sewage systems. Because nitrates are, unlike the other elements in sewage effluent, nitrates are persistent in the environment. There's some denitrification processes that occur, but once that nitrate gets to the groundwater, it's relatively stable chemically. And so at that point, you need to evaluate how much nitrate is going to be leaving the point of compliance and entering into the aquifer, which we can talk about.
What's the point of compliance?
So from a regulatory standpoint, all of this falls underneath the opposition's point, the state's anti-degradation law for groundwater. But what the state has done, and this is in statute, they have Department of Ecology that's responsible for groundwater quality in the state and the anti-degradation code. They have delegated the authority for sewage systems to Department of Health. And Department of Health has established the point of compliance for a sewage system as the downstream edge of the aquifer I'm sorry, the downstream edge of the drain field. So if you can imagine, you have a drain field like so, and effluent going in there and infiltrating downward and a groundwater flow direction towards me, the point of compliance would be on the downstream edge of this page, down here where the effluent intercepts the groundwater table. And so this takes into account all of the processes that take place in the drain field, in the septic tank, and in the vadose zone or the unsaturated zone as that effluent migrates, in this case, 140 feet through unsaturated material to reach groundwater. And that point of compliance then is not a loading of the aquifer. It's just it's what they call an exceedance limit. It's a way to manage for Department of Health to manage the anti-degradation law. Does it acknowledge? Yes.
What do you mean it's not the loading of the aquifer?
If because it's a point of compliance. So it's to ensure that it's a very conservative method to estimate what the maximum conceivable impact of the aquifer could be. So in our case, and I'll spoiler, and they had mentioned it, you know, I had estimated that this development would result in a impact to the aquifer over background of 1.2 milligrams per liter at the point of compliance, not everywhere throughout the aquifer. In fact, you can apply for an alternate point of compliance at the property line, which would be substantially less, likely orders of magnitude less, if one wanted. And you can imagine and appreciate how even beyond further the property line, the nitrate concentration from the drain field would decrease even further.
Sorry,
and the processes that within the aquifer, you're kind of done with the chemical processes to deplete nitrate. At that point, it's all about mixing and dilution and diffusion.
And there's a lot of water in the aquifer to mix. And
this is a prolific aquifer. This aquifer, Malibu Water District, did a 10-day constant rate pumping test at 1,200 gallons per minute. That's 3 CFS. That's the size of a stream. They pumped that for 10 continuous days. And at the pumping well, they only had you guys could help me out because you know it. I had forgotten because I get numbers mixed up sometimes. But it was less than 2 feet,
approximately.
1.5 feet? Yeah.
Yeah, not much.
1.5 feet of drawdown. Imagine drawing a well down for 10 days at 1,200 GPM. And the well inside of the well, which has its own inefficiencies built into it, is only drawn down a foot and a half. At a monitoring well located 100 feet away, there was tenths of a foot of impact.
And that's also the strongest point.
That's helpful.
So this indicates a very, when a well draws down, it draws down, you know, a cone of depression. Like when you suck a Slurpee and you're sucking, or a snow cone, you're sucking all the juice out of it. And you see the white forming around in the ice, right? The same thing happens in the aquifer. It's the exact same thing, really. And you're forming a cone of depression. So when you're drilling, pumping on a well, you know, that cone of depression reaches out until it reaches a point of equilibrium, a steady state, if you will, where it has, it's a cone. So much water is coming into the cone toward the well that it's driven the water level to a stable drawdown level. And anyway, that happens in wells. And in this well, it went out maybe 150 feet is the radius from the pumping well in this particular case. Was the cone of depression. So it's not like these wells are going to have a cone of depression that reaches out thousands of feet. It's empirically demonstrated that it's on the order of, you know, maybe hundreds.
And how much was the drawdown for that little area?
Within that 5 inches? Test in well six, 10-day pumping test, it was 1.5 feet, thereabouts, 1.5 feet at the pumping well. And it was less than 1 foot. I'll say that to be safe. I think it was substantially less, but it was less than 1 foot at the monitoring well, which was 100 feet distant. So if it's nonlinear, but if you were to extrapolate that out, you know, it's going to be on the order. I mean, I'll be generous and say it's hundreds of feet, but it's not thousands of feet. And I'll remind you that the wellhead protection area that was delineated by the water system is 2,000 feet, right? So that's orders of magnitude. It's an order of magnitude, probably more conservative, protective, wellhead protection area than is actually physically tributary to the well. all that other well within the, all that other groundwater within, no matter how hard they're pumping within the, within that 2000 foot wellhead protection area, probably just flowing on by and doesn't even notice. It's no different than sticking a pump into the Columbia River. You're going to have a proximal area of influence to that pump, and then the rest of the water is just going to float on by.
Okay, you've got like 5 minutes. Cool. So tell us, is this going to be safe?
Okay, so yeah, so we skipped over a lot of technical things that I would have liked to have gone over, but I enjoy talking about that topic. So a component of this, and it's an appendix to my report, but a component of this is what we call a, the method to analysis. It's a nitrate loading analysis to really focus and hone in on this one persistent chemical, nitrate, that is really the result, the probable worst impact from a residential development. So we have to hone in on that a little more. And we call it method two. It's called something different now, but when we did the report, it was under the method two because we hadn't revised the WAC yet. So it was consistent with regulation at the time. And now it, and there hasn't been much change in the regulation that would have impacted our results. Our results would still stand because I've done reports under the new reg. Long story short, what this requires is that we take a look at all the input parameters to the drain field, and then we make an assessment to come up with that estimate for nitrate loading at the point of compliance. In doing so, it's admittedly a conservative method. It's a mass balance approach, which is a very common approach. It is a Department of Health's preferred way of assessing nitrate loading. It assumes that we were using one community drain field instead of 11 dispersed drain fields across the property. So in that way alone, it was conservative. It's also conservative in all the input parameters and the way that the model is set up. Conservative assumptions assume hydraulic conductivity of about 1/6 of actual, and a ground a saturated thickness of the aquifer that is about 1/5 of the actual. And I did all of that deliberately to provide the highest level of conservatism possible, to avoid having to be in situations like this where we're having to explain ourselves. So
they still don't like your numbers. So how right. These numbers are different.
I mean, my numbers are defensible, and Your Honor, I would invite you as you read my studies, I would just invite you to look at it in the context of, okay, could I recreate this myself if I had to? I would argue you probably could.
Let me ask you a question, because I'll forget it. Because this is what I'm getting the sense of. Your numbers, you feel, are defensible. Mr. Peterson feels that his numbers are defensible, or his opinions are defensible. Can both be correct? Can you say, well, yeah, I mean, it could be 5, it could be 3. I think it's going to be 3. He thinks it's going to be 5. Both of them are within, you know, a mathematical parameter, I guess, is the best way for me to put it.
A couple things. One is, yeah, there's you know, some science is interpretation, right? But you have to be able to back up your interpretation. So I'm asserting that I have backed up my interpretation. I'm asserting my work is repeatable and defensible as laid out in these documents. What Mr. Peterson was saying earlier, I think, is a little bit of hyperbole. I mean, I didn't, and I've read through the documents. Without going through a critique of his work, I'm not exactly sure why they have a hard time accepting. Here's one thing. They are equating the loading of my 1.2 milligram per liter estimate that I came up with. They're equating that to a loading across the aquifer. And that's patently false. That's just not the case at all. It's for one. For two is, if you look at, you know, for example, some of the work that they did in Exhibit A, some of the graphs that are in there where they're plotting nitrate concentrations over time and then the housing developments and correlating construction of housing developments to nitrate increases in nitrate concentration. If you look at that, there's a lot of unexplained things that occur. You know, there's a 4-year lag that's introduced between the time a housing development is developed and the time a nitrate increases. Like, but there's no explanation for why we have that 4-year lag present. There's a massive reset of the data and all the data sets. In 2012, they They basically get reset. There's no explanation for that. There's no distinguishment. If we're going to track increases in nitrate concentrations coincident with housing development construction, well, why don't we take a look at agriculture, which is every bit as culpable in this area, or potentially more than any of the on-site sewage systems. And so there's just a lot of information that I think is maybe glossed over. So you ask, sir, how can we come to such different conclusions? I'm just trying to say that I'm not sure we've necessarily come to different conclusions. I did not see where RH2 completed their own nitrate analysis. They only critiqued mine. And so, you know, I would be curious for them to maybe complete their own, do their own hydrogeologic analysis, provide those input parameters, and then explain to all of us how they came up with the conclusion that my results are not valid.
Thank you.
You know what, while we're talking about that, there's some consternation about a couple things. One is this, you know, like I said, the anchor degradation rule keeps coming up. But that's delegated to Department of Health. It's accomplished by other mechanisms. And this is in the ecology's water quality implementation guidance document, right? They talk about how they're delegating authority to deal with anti-degradation issues to Department of Health. Well, what's Department of Health doing with them? Well, they wrote WAC 246 or 272A803020, right? They wrote the septic code. They did the loss rule, the same thing. This is how these agencies work. And so the anti-degradation thing is handled. The 2 milligrams per liter is widely seen, and it is documented in more than one place. For example, in the permit writer's handbook for Department of Ecology, it's in some others. And so the 2 milligrams per liter threshold over background, anything under that is considered to be a low impact. They may not express it as low impact, but they express 2 milligrams and above as moderate impact requiring further study. So then that by default means that less than 2 milligrams per liter is a low impact that they explicitly say does not require further study. And by the way, the work that we've done has met all the regulatory requirements under the loss code, under the septic code, under the county CARA code, and under the health district's septic regulations. It's met all of the hydrogeologic and nitrate requirements. And our results then are less, they're lower than the trigger level for additional study. That's my conclusion. I can talk more if you want.
Do you have any other questions?
I do.
I think we are close to our time. Let me see if I have any more questions. Talk about that.
Well, while you're thinking, I would say Mr. Hotchkiss earlier mentioned that the county code does not allow subdivisions within a wellhead protection area. Again, I'll challenge that. Chapter 1182 just triggers the need. A major subdivision is a type of development, if it happens to fall proximal within a wellhead protection area, triggers the need for the type of study that I've completed. It doesn't prohibit it.
I think that's all we have.
Okay. Let me just a second here.
Can I recall Mr. Port for a quick?
Well, no, we got to go through some. I'll give you a few more minutes.
If I have permission to continue, I'll just point one more thing out about this.
It's up to Ms. Sampson if she wants to use it.
This is, you know, there's just confusion about the regulatory setting. We've done everything that the regulations require, and we have met regulatory requirement. it was Andrew Jones, Ryan, that you were talking about. This is Exhibit A, page 23 through 24. Andrew Jones is Department of Health Loss Program Supervisor. And he says It's incredible that RHU put this in here because it proves my point. It says the Department of Health loss program aims to limit impacts at the point of compliance. I explained what that was. We want the impacts to be less than 2 milligrams per liter above background, which they are, or no more than 5 milligrams per liter total. Remember, just because we have some hits on one or two wells that are 5 milligrams per liter, that is not background for the aquifer. That's unscientific. That's just scientifically not true. Those are what we call outliers. That is not the background for the aquifer. In areas of pristine groundwater, this effectively means that we limit impacts to 2 milligrams per liter of nitrogen at the point of compliance. Again, we're at 1.2 over background.
Okay. I've heard the alarm.
Sure. Thank and you. That was Exhibit A, you said?
Yes, sir. Exhibit A, right. 23 through 24.
Got it. Okay.
It's the Peterson's declaration.
Now, there is an opportunity for cross-exam. Mr. Hotchkiss.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Sullivan.
Good afternoon.
You were hired by Mr. Port to give your opinions today. Is that fair?
That is.
And I'm not criticizing you for it. I'm just pointing out the facts, okay? And you were paid for your opinions today. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
How much were you paid?
I haven't been paid for today.
Okay. How much you've been paid totally?
But that's not relevant to me.
Okay. So, but Mr. You indicated that you got 1.2 milligrams per liter above background. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. You criticized or you indicated that RH2 didn't do their own analysis. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So if you believe that 1.2 milligrams per liter was already too much when that individual was getting paid, would you do your own analysis?
Well, I don't believe it's too much.
Okay. But I'm saying if you did, would you do your own analysis?
So you're asking me a hypothetical question. Well, look, I don't compromise my science for my client. I wouldn't want to be in that position because I could very easily end up in a position like this today where I've sworn an oath and now I got to defend a position that I can't.
Okay.
Questions unclear to me.
But yeah, it's too much for him, right? And so they didn't do their analysis. Fair? Okay.
I would say that if they're going to critique my analysis, they ought to try to duplicate it themselves. So.
Okay. But you're assuming that it's actually being critiqued. So, there's two wells that are above 5 milligrams per liter that are within the Malaga Water District, correct?
I'm aware of one, maybe two.
Okay. So there's actually two. There's well one and well two, correct?
Okay.
Do you believe that's correct? Did you review the data?
Yes.
Okay. And those wells one and two are close to well five, correct?
No, they're about 1,000 feet of distance.
Okay. But within the wellhead protection area of well five, right, is this subdivision, correct?
Within the 10-year time and travel radius, well five is about 900 feet from the proposed development.
And that's within the 10-year radius, correct?
Probably within the five.
It's within the five-year radius as well, correct?
Well, let me backtrack. It's between 5 and 10.
Okay. I can show you the map that indicates that it's in five. That's in the record. But do you believe it's within 5 and 10?
Sure.
All right. So do you know how the water within the Malaga Water District just gets dispersed to its customers? Did you know that they're mixing of water between wells 5, 1, and 2 when those wells go out, okay, when the water goes out?
I did not know.
Okay. And so in this particular case, regardless of whether or not the water comes from well 1, 5, or 2, it's all going to the same customer. Is that fair?
Yes.
And it's all increasing nitrates in that process, correct?
I don't concur that it's increasing in nitrates.
Okay. So you're saying that you can increase nitrates 1.2 milligrams per liter at the point of compliance, but not increase the total nitrates going out to the customers of the Malaga Water District?
Well, you're going to do that. It's going to be infinitesimally small at that point, right? Like it's immeasurable, which by definition is a de minimis. If once you mix water from various wells, anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 feet, cross gradient, not even necessarily down gradient, and that some of those nitrate molecules from our development might make it into that is conceivable, but it's infinitesimally small.
But these developments will be increasing nitrates for the Malaga Water District residents, even under your opinion, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you dispute any of the data that Ryan, that Mr. Peterson has relied upon to come to his conclusions?
Yes.
Okay. Do you dispute the testing at the wells 1 and 2?
Hydraulic testing or
nitrate testing?
I have not seen, I mean, I haven't raised dispute, but I have not personally verified the lab that did it, is an accredited lab, et cetera, but I took them at face value.
Okay. And so you took the well five at face value as well, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so if Ryan and Mr. Peterson is relying upon that data to establish his opinions, I realize that maybe you disagree with the time estimate between 4 years. I think you had mentioned that, but you don't actually, the underlying data, you don't dispute.
The underlying data that of nitrate concentrations in wells.
Yes.
Not necessarily. I dispute maybe some of the assertions of the increases, because how you analyze data matters.
Did you do an analysis for, I believe you indicated that as far as agriculture goes, that you believe that some of these nitrates could be coming from agriculture, correct?
Correct.
Did you do an analysis of how agriculture is infiltrating nitrate or causing nitrates to increase in the aquifer?
No, that's beyond the scope of the regulation and my services.
Well. Okay. But you did criticize here today, Mr. Port has criticized the idea that these nitrates aren't coming from agriculture, correct?
Well, we don't know that unless we do an isotope analysis.
Okay, but that none of that analysis has been done, fair?
Correct.
Okay. Have you read the opinions of Dr. Krause or Mr. Wilson?
Yes, I have.
Okay. you indicated that this is not a sole source aquifer, correct? Under the federal law. But a sole source aquifer requires an application to the federal government to get that approved, correct?
I don't know the process.
Okay. And if that does require an application, then that requires a lot of money to no real benefit. Is that fair?
Maybe.
Okay. So the fact that it's not a sole source aquifer under federal law really is irrelevant. Is that fair?
Well, it's relevant from the standpoint that it's not one of the triggers for the critical area aquifer recharge area code under Chelan County.
But we had other triggers in this particular circumstance that hit that. Okay. You indicated that that there's no, I think you said the Malaga Water District doesn't have authority to enforce its wellhead protection area. Is that what you said?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, a wellhead protection area is not a regulatory enforcement zone.
Okay. But they call it a wellhead protection area. Is that fair?
Yes.
Why do they call it a wellhead protection area?
Because when they're applying to put the well, drill the well there, they have to prove Department of Health to get that well certified. They have to prove Department of Health that they have thought through all of the potential contaminants within the wellhead protection area.
Okay. And so you do not believe that pursuant to the county regulations that the wellhead protection area is a critical area under those regulations, fair?
No.
Okay. Department of Health made a determination that the Malaga Aquifer has a high susceptibility, correct?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. That being something that'd be important for you to be aware of when you're doing your analysis?
Well, I have read through everything Department of Health, Department of Ecology, and USGS has come up with, and the Malaga Aquifer has not come up as a rated high priority or high nitrate aquifer in any of that.
And your determination was actually just the opposite of the Department of Health's when you determined that it was low to moderate susceptibility, correct?
I have not seen Department of Health's. I'm unaware of Department of Health's. Maybe you can expound on that and tell me what's the source of that.
Okay. But the low to moderate, you made your own determination that, and the high susceptibility from DOH is in the materials, but the low to moderate susceptibility, you made your own determination that it was low to moderate susceptibility, correct?
No. So we're talking about susceptibility. These are the natural features. And so the moderate is driven by, one thing, for example, the presence of more conductive soils, right? The low was driven by other factors, thick vadose zone, presence of clay, et cetera.
And so that was a susceptibility analysis, correct?
For the physical aquifer, yes.
Yes. And your determination was low to moderate.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. You made initially in your, I want to get the dates right. I believe it was in November 2024, error report, a determination of 1.16 milligrams per liter over background, correct?
I haven't read that report. That report's been superseded, so I haven't read that report since I superseded it. Okay. I can explain the reasons why it was superseded. It was superseded to reflect the use of advanced nitrate removal system, treatment system for the septics, and then also based on the phone conversation, I kind of relented to groundwater gradient that RH2 had proposed over mine. I just did as a compromise so that we didn't have to fight about it. And then the last thing that was so-called, if there was any mistake in there, is because I had used a value for square feet instead of lineal feet. Mm-hmm. So I had to adjust that, which slightly changed my results.
Okay. You made a mistake mistakes happen, but you corrected that mistake in your second report, correct?
That's correct.
But your second report doesn't have 0.16 milligrams per liter over background, correct?
No, but because of the two parameters that I changed that I mentioned to you, it actually increased the estimate for my results.
So 1.2 milligrams per liter, correct?
Okay, correct.
And that was because of a conversation you had with Mr. Peterson, correct?
Yes. Okay.
You said that because there's a mix of the water, it's diluted, correct?
In what context?
You indicated that originally that there was a nitrate determination at the point of compliance, correct? Of 1.2 milligrams per liter. And then ultimately that would be diluted when it got into the water system, mixed with other water.
Oh, correct. By the time it makes it into the water system, it's going to be additionally diluted far beyond that 1.2 milligrams.
But you don't know what that dilution is.
Well, you could calculate it just beyond the scope of the study because we had already met the standard.
Okay, but you didn't calculate it, fair?
Right.
Okay. And you hit on this point, but I just want to make sure I hit it. February 11, 2025 report was superseded the November 21, 2024 report, which is also in the record, correct?
That's correct.
No further questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't have any further questions. Any redirect?
No, you got the Andrew Jones quote I was talking about? No redirect.
All right. So all times are up. Here's what I'm going to do. I am going to... defer to written closings. I've in my old age found them much more helpful than having somebody try to speak off the cuff like we do in trials. Even in trials, we get to think about it a little bit, but I do want there to be some succinct closings. We will have an applicant. I'm not going to involve the county in this. We'll have, unless you want to be. Did you want to submit anything further in writing? I don't see Ms. Walter jumping up. So, so we'll have an applicant, the Malaga Water District, and then a reply. But we're going to have page limits and we're going to have dates. So, I didn't think about the dates. I just thought about the page limits when I was going through here. So today is the 15th. So I don't want to drag this on for too long. Can you have, Ms. Sampson, let's go to the 24th. Can you have, by April 24th, can you have your 15-page limit closing prepared?
I would ask more time.
because of so many demands on my time.
Well, we all have demands on our time.
True.
But I could make you do it right now, and then you wouldn't be nearly as organized.
It'd be as good. Okay. What?
So April 24th, Friday, April 24th, 5 p.m. And then we would go to May 1st for Malaga Water District.
And page limits, Your Honor?
15 pages.
Okay.
Now, I thought about this, though. Outside of that, that's 15 pages of argument or reference to the record or whatever you want to do with your 15 pages. I will allow you to submit additional or for you or initial proposed findings and conclusions if that's what you want to do outside of the 15 pages. And then we'll go 1 week after that, which is May 8th. And that would be the applicant's rebuttal. And that'll be a limit of 10 pages.
And their initial applicant's initial brief is how long, Your Honor?
15 pages. Okay. Yeah. 15 for the applicant, 15 for the water district, and a reply of 10 pages. This is not a time to submit new evidence. It's not a time to submit anything new except for your arguments. Then that would put my decision due by May 22nd. And after, if I think that I need additional time after I get the written materials, then I'll be in contact with the parties to see whether I do or don't. But generally what I do is the evidence is set. So I will, there are some uncontested findings. So I'll start on my decision earlier. So hopefully we can get it out by May 22nd.
Your Honor, would you be amenable to calling Mr. Crane or Mr. Crane very briefly, maybe 5 minutes, under 5 minutes, to address one other issue?
What's the offer of proof? What needs to be said that hasn't been said in his declaration?
If there's any question that either was a minor issue, I think it's clear in the record, but if there's any question that there's any kind of authority issue about whether the Malaga Water District has authority to be doing what they're doing, that would be what it would address.
And exercise
the authority.
Yeah, no, that's something that could have been taken care of in the declaration if it hasn't already.
Yeah.
I haven't gone back to review that again. So
I think it's in there, Your Honor, but
yeah, bring it up in your in your closing then. All right. So the record's open for those documents to come in, but otherwise the record for evidence is closed. It's just being left open for the legal argument. Thank you very much. It was very, very good presentations. Mr. Peterson, I appreciated your testimony. It's very helpful. Mr. Sullivan, we've met before. And once again, your opinions and expertise are also very, very helpful. So, I have a hard job to do. So I appreciate everybody coming out today. And people that came out to observe the proceedings, I appreciate that too. It's very, very important. So with that, I am now going to adjourn this tax day, April 15, 2026, meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. Thank you all very much for coming. This meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.